Welcome back, Tim Bubar. How are you doing today?
Dave Groon, I'm happy. I'm glad to see you. I'm glad I'm here. How you doing?
Hey, one of these things happened again to you today that's happened before. You just finished one of your favorite things. You know, you just, that you ate, one of your favorite things.
Oh, yeah. I think I talked about this on the podcast once
you
before.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, so
I'm doing awesome because I had an egg roll.
I won't call him out. Maybe he would want me. I don't know how he would feel about it. But there is someone at Two Rivers who just likes to bring treats by for the staff.
Yeah.
And he does it a lot, and he goes over the top. And every once in a while, he brings Master's Donuts.
Yeah.
And not just the donuts, but the egg rolls. And they are really something special.
They really are. They're magically delicious. And once again, as we said before, we're not sponsored by them. But hey, this week we're continuing on a couple more weeks in Matthew before we're going to kick off a series for Easter, which I'm pretty excited about. Yeah. Not going to talk about that yet, but I'm pretty excited about it because it's not like what we normally do. It's a little bit different for 6 weeks, get a little break up from Matthew, but excited about that series. Anyway, but we're coming to the end in Matthew's gospel in chapter 4. And the way the first four chapters set up, they really serve as an introduction. The first four chapters are an introduction to the whole gospel. The whole thing so far has been about identifying the identity of Jesus. And really, this section picks up at the beginning of chapter 3 and finishes, obviously, at the end of chapter 4. And we're talking about, this week, Mark talked about how Jesus unveils his authority, inviting us to live out a new identity and purpose. And so as we get started, I just want to talk, you know, Tim, people want to know more of you. I've heard that. Could we get to know more of Tim Bubar?
He's an enigma.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Yeah. So have you ever had a moment in your life where you had to entirely change your trajectory? Like the whole, your life is going one way and all of a sudden you're like, wow, I didn't see this coming.
Yeah.
And I have to go a different way. Maybe in college, maybe in a career.
Yeah, that's around that time of life. There's, a few things like going from, am I going to get married to, okay, I'm getting married. That's, you know, major trajectory change.
You know, one of the things I thought about was, like a lot of people might not know what you studied in college initially. You were?
Oh, yeah. I started off as an archaeology major.
Archaeology.
Yeah. And I loved it. Like, I loved the classes. It was great, but I knew this isn't going to be my job.
So is that why you collect water? I mean, I'm trying to see how all these things relate.
I was interested in archaeology because I'm the kind of person who would have a water collection.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
these things are related.
The two are definitely,
I can totally make sense.
Definitely related. Yeah.
Okay.
But to your question of changing trajectory. I mean, the biggest one probably that was kind of surprising and shocking for me, but more so for people around me, because I saw it coming internally a little bit before people around me did. It was, when I was out of college, my second job out of college, I went to work for the state of Minnesota, and I was in a politically appointed position. I worked for the Commissioner of Agriculture in the Jesse the Body Ventura.
I know you know this. Good, dude.
Jesse the Body Ventura, WWF wrestler before there's WWE, and commentator and general wild person. became governor of Minnesota, for the kids out there who aren't old enough to know who he is or whether he became governor of Minnesota. And yeah, I worked for his administration for 3 or 3.5 years or something like that. And then I went from that to, there came a point in my life when it was really clear that God was leading me towards something else, like really clear. He just dragged me right into it. And I ended up going to work for the church that Kara and I attended and had been volunteering at. And they asked me to come on staff, and I eventually did. So that was like, you know, my coworkers were like, wait,
you're going to do what?
You're resigning and you're going to go work for a church? You can just do that? I mean,
they didn't know the long line of pastors in your family heritage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't.
Yeah. So in that too, one of the things we talked about is sometimes as people who are in ministry, we can be a little bit reluctant to talk about, hey, I did this change because the result is I'm now in vocation.
Right.
Ministry.
It's not like every time, if God is going to change the trajectory of your life, he's going to have you take a job in vocational ministry. That is not the story, no.
Yeah, but it is our story, and right. we only have our story. Yep. And so sometimes, but we also don't want to make it that if your vocation is in vocational ministry, that reflects stuff that's happening in the Bible. But if you were in one vocation and God changed the trajectory of that into something else, mm-hmm. that is somehow less than, because it isn't. It could be, hey, I was working in the medical field, and God changed the trajectory of my life, and I entered into the education field, or right. whatever it may be, where God changed your trajectory.
Right.
Really saying that the goal isn't, okay, now I would be in vocational ministry, but now my vocation is coming under alignment with what Jesus is doing. And so that's really what we're saying. It's like how, and it could be, really, he's just giving you clarity on wherever you are currently working is ministry space.
Yeah. I mean, that was my ministry opportunities just changed in some ways, you know?
Yeah.
I had some great opportunities with the people I worked with. I loved that about my job.
I think mine actually, 24 years ago, mine actually diminished. My ability to be around people who didn't know Jesus and to have natural conversations with people who didn't know Jesus was greatly reduced as I went into vocational ministry from when I was in the workplace. And it was one of the things at first that I really missed. I really missed the fact that, initially I would say I was kind of underground as a follower of Jesus, mm-hmm. not intentionally, it just wasn't in people's face. But over time, I think specifically in the last job that I had before I went into vocational ministry, where the people in my workplace knew I was a follower of Jesus and would ask me questions, or they might be like, hey, can you pray for me? Or I'm not saying you need to do this, but if there's opportunity to have a lunchtime Bible study in your workplace, hey, mm-hmm. go for it, right? And so there were people who were asking questions. And one of the stories I've shared before, even the guy who was taking my job, I was like training him to take my job as I was leaving. And his name was Daryl. And Daryl was really clear that he didn't believe in God. I don't believe in God. But I didn't realize how curious Daryl was. And we were doing a small group in my home and talking about it, like who were we going to invite. It was part of what our church was doing, inviting people into our home, hosting a small group. And I was kind of talking about it, and Daryl was listening in. And one day he's like, hey, can we come to that? I'm like, what? Who's we? And he's like, can my wife and I, and can we come to that?
Wow.
And it really was a good reminder that, just often God's at work in people's lives in a way that we don't even understand. And Daryl ended up, he and his wife ended up coming to church, and they ended up on the path. And now while I knew him, Daryl never gave his life to Jesus. But I don't know where he is today, and who knows what God has done in his life. All that to say, that wasn't in ministry. That was just normal life.
Right.
And as we come to this passage in particular, I think it's really important that people are not like, okay, when Jesus invites you to come and follow him, and he gives you a new identity and purpose, that can just be transforming how you're, it's not less than to take it as transforming how I see my world, and every space and place where I am is an opportunity to join God in what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in that sense, I would say for me, and it sounds like for you, long before I had a quote ministry job, God had already changed, had given me a new identity and a new purpose and called me into something. And it expressed itself one way working in one workplace, and it expressed itself another way working in another place when I was working at a church. But, you know, for me, when I was working at the Department of Ag, it was, you know, we didn't do a Bible study over lunch, but I worked with people who would see a movie that had like religious or moral themes, and they knew I was serious about this Jesus stuff. And they'd be like, hey, will you watch this with us? And we'd watch in half hour segments over our lunch break. We'd watch a movie and they'd want to get my take on it just because they want to know. I don't know. It was just really, it was really interesting. But, you know, it wasn't that the trajectory change of identity and purpose wasn't really about my job. That came early, you know, that came when I came to Christ and he gave me a new identity and a new purpose. Yeah.
For me, it was, I think, where I had a new identity and purpose, but it took me a long time to wake up that that could play out in my vocation.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get my mind around, while I could be doing this as a job, I can see every opportunity along the way where God had actually given me opportunity to be part of what he was doing. And early on, I was missing it every step along the way. And then over time, as he was transforming me, and I was really getting into this idea that following Jesus really matters. One of the big thoughts that I had is, wow, I really care more what Jesus thinks of me than what anybody else thinks of me. And that allowed me to readjust.
That's big.
Yeah, it is. To readjust priorities, to rearrange my life and priorities based on that reality. And then to be able to go, wow, my workplace is a space and place where God's at work. And that's just true for everyone. And so we never want people to think that just because you work in a certain space or place where you're like, oh, people don't think this is very spiritual. God's at work there already.
Yeah.
And your vocation in whatever it may be is just as spiritual than people who are called to lead in a local church.
Yeah.
And often I think people think, oh, that's for other people. I know I did. I thought that was for other people. I always thought that was for the people, like their job was more important than my job. Mm-hmm. And I really woke up to the fact that it's just different.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, okay, I'm not plugging the book, but I think at the time it really was, just gonna date it. It was Rick Warren's Purpose Driven Life.
Yeah.
And it really was an awakening to go, oh, and I think he's got a line in there. I could be misquoting this totally. Like, God doesn't care what you do for a vocation. And it was totally liberating for me to be like, oh, I can join God in whatever he's doing independent of my vocation. And at the time, I was like, okay, so God doesn't care what I do for a vocation. So I could go do whatever I wanted for a vocation. And I felt like the freedom for me to continue to pursue and being an airline pilot and trying to make as much money as I could make. And oh, by the way, I can tell people about Jesus along the way. Uh-huh. And at the time, I knew it was become equipped. And then for me, it took further clarification that no, what I'm calling you to is to be equipped and to not provide for yourself. That was a big step.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my job isn't to provide for me.
Yeah.
That's really God's job.
Yeah.
And that was pretty, pretty wild ride.
Yeah, and that's important to, I mean, like hearing you, that story, it's a good reminder, especially after you read, you know, Calling of the First Disciples. I just think it's so easy to go, well, yes, some people are become apostles. Well, that's not me. You know, like just to view it as, yeah, sometimes Jesus calls people to follow him and go do this enormous thing. And, but he doesn't always do that. Yep. That's right. I mean, like, so you could read this and go, yep, I'm supposed to go do what the apostles did and be an apostle or something.
Yeah.
Or you could read it and go, he does that with some people. He doesn't do that with me. So then he doesn't do anything with me. But this reality that no, he calls people, that's what he does.
Yes.
And he gives them a new identity and that new identity has a purpose. And then you live that out in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
And yeah. And there's, I mean, even what you're talking about, it's like, God calls everybody to depend on him. Like that's the life that we're supposed to live with him. But there was like, you sensed a specific, I don't know how to put it, but it sounds like you're saying like a specific emphasis from God, clarity from him. Like, Dave, what you need to know is, how did you put it? You don't provide for you. I provide for you. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, and I think part of it began, if I try and remember back, this isn't exactly where I thought this conversation was headed.
Yeah.
But initially when we were programming this out, we do actually give some forethought to what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But we also just kind of let things go. It really was like, if I think through the sequence, it really was resigning myself to God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And the only thing that I knew that I knew that I knew was God. And I can't tell you how I knew it. I just knew it, uh-huh. that God was calling me to become equipped. And if somebody at that time said to me, for what? I couldn't have said it. I couldn't have said that it was for this. In fact, if you had said at that time, I want you to become equipped so you can teach the Bible someday, I would have run in the other direction. I'd be working for an airline right now. You know, I do believe that. And so God lays things out for us, I think, in a way that we understand that we can, you know, figure out along the way, along with wise counsel, had some wise people in my world, and at the same time had some really discouraging people. And the most, I say this all the time, the most discouraging people in my world at that point in my life were followers of Jesus who thought that it was irresponsible for me to not have a job and say, I'm going to school because I had a wife and two small children. And that sounded like a very irresponsible thing to do. And the only thing that I knew that I knew was that I was supposed to do that. And I was supposed to go to school and become equipped for what? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, then it was, okay, but I got to figure out how I'm going to provide for me and go to school. And when I finally came to the end of, and it was through wise counsel, through scripture, and a guy in my life, a mentor, who said to me, that's not your job. God's job is to give you provision. Your job is to be obedient. And I was like, oh, and when I resigned it to, okay, God, I'll do whatever you want to do. And I turn all this stuff over, all these opportunities for me to provide for myself, I give them back to you, then the door opens. Hmm. And that was just my experience. I'm not saying it's not a formula.
Right, exactly.
It's not the way God works. Yeah. It was just how God worked in my life at that time so that I could step in with confidence saying, okay, when life really starts to be terrible, I know that I know this is what God called me to. Yeah. And then the next thing was, life got really terrible.
Yeah.
And it required that I knew that I knew that it was going to be that way.
Yeah.
So in that, as we look at, you know, God calling or Jesus calling, sorry, four fishermen into being part of his group of followers, right? To be part of his disciples, the word is Talmudim. These are the guys who are coming into his school. Jesus is a rabbi inviting these four fishermen into his school, and their response is, okay, let's go. And I think there's a lot that we can press into around that if we wanted to. So in that, how does follow, like we talked about the idea that, and you said it already, Tim, that we get a new identity that leads to a new purpose. These two things are connected. We can't separate them, right? And so a little bit about that, like, okay, how does that happen? How does following Jesus, how does that change our identity, but not only our identity and purpose?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it comes clear from scripture that God gives us our identity, you know? So I don't know, at least this is the way I think about it. It's not like I discover a new identity as I follow him, like in the sense that, like, at least when I think about it, I'm not thinking about like, oh, what's my unique identity? I don't know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
It's God gives an identity to people who are followers of Jesus. They are sons of God, you know?
Yes.
They are heirs.
Yes.
They are
independent of whether or not you're male or female.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes. They're sons in the sense that they're the heirs. They're
co-heirs with Christ.
Yep.
Yep.
And they are, so if somebody's following Jesus, they're a yeah, like a co-heir with Jesus. And they are an image bearer representing the unseen God in a seen way in the world. They're a new creation, you know, they're a sheep following the shepherd. I mean, these are all pieces of it, but it's like this package identity that I think of as like, that's put on you.
Yep.
You might learn more about it as you go, but you're not like discovering, you do have a unique wiring, but when I'm thinking about your identity, that's not what you're discovering. You're not discovering your unique wiring. It's who has God said you are, because he made you this.
Yeah.
And that's what has a purpose that goes with it. An heir, an image bearer has a purpose to live out. An heir is supposed to do something. An image bearer is supposed to do something. And that's what I think of as the purpose coming out of the identity.
Yeah, no, okay. So going back to trying to relate this to like my real workplace,
when you worked in the real world,
when I worked in the real world, and even then, you know, it's may not be the real world. But as I thought about that, it came to mind. I had the last job that I had was a job working for, you know, I was in the military. It was a guy who was over all of naval air training. And here I was coming from another place, and I'm stepping in, and I have this job title, and I only really knew a little bit about the job. I only knew just a little bit about the job. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know. But as I stepped in, I discovered that I went from just a normal flight instructor, just one of the guys, uh-huh, one of the guys and gals, you know, and just one of them, to now people saw me different.
Yeah.
Because my title had changed. My identity had changed.
Yeah.
I was the same person. I was the same rank. I didn't get promoted. Uh-huh. But because I was part of this other organization, mm-hmm, that oversaw them, and I had a new title, mm-hmm, people treated me different. I was like, whoa, like everybody's super friendly to me now. Everybody wants to be my friend. Why? It took me a while to get my mind around, mm-hmm, the fact that people saw me different,
yeah,
simply because I was in a new,
right,
spot, a new role, yeah, I had a new identity,
yeah,
and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
And so I think of that as a follower of Jesus. I've stepped into this whole new world. I kind of got my mind around it, but not really. Uh-huh. And what does it really mean for people to see Jesus in and around and through me because I'm now living in his kingdom, mm-hmm, right? And that's really what Matthew wants us to see, right?
Yeah.
He really wants us to see from here on, what is life under God's rule and reign? What does that look like?
Yeah.
What does it look like to live in God's kingdom?
Yeah.
And he begins to unpack it from here. Mm-hmm. And for me, it can be a little bit hard to get my mind around, but
yeah. I was kind of laughing and smiling as you were describing that, because I can.
I thought you were calling me an idiot. No, I wasn't sure what was going on.
No, because I think about the last, you know, quote unquote real job I had. Yeah. And how things changed when I got a new identity. When I didn't, I mean, in that job, and I didn't know what I was doing yet. And I didn't even really know what my job was. My boss didn't even totally know what my job was. Yeah. He kind of was like, well, we think we need somebody to do these kinds of things generally. And I was like, are you sure you want to hire me? I mean, I think I said to him, like, I got fired from, I mean, they didn't use the word fired, but I got let go from my last job. They didn't want me to work there anymore. And this guy's hiring me.
Yeah.
But it was like, and now I'm in the commissioner's office and I'm wearing a suit every day. And it was like, like people view, before I even knew what I was doing, it was like, I'm on a different track now that's running in a new direction. And I don't have, like, it's like, as I'm going down this, I'm going to discover what this job is and how it works. but I already had this new position in this new environment, and I could totally relate to what you were saying. That's why I wasn't saying you're an idiot. I was laughing because I was like, that totally makes sense. It is like new identity, new purpose, and you don't understand it all at the start, but you're discovering it as you walk down that path.
Yeah, you're discovering it as you go, and it can be really awesome. And I think there's also, if we lose perspective on it, there's ditches on both sides. Mm-hmm. And if I think back to the 2.5 years that I was in that job, you start out going like, what, why do you see me any different? Why would you see me any different? But then over time, there was an arrogance probably that developed to the point where it's like, don't you know who I am? Uh-huh. You know? And I think, as I think about being a follower of Jesus, that there can be an arrogance that uh-huh. develops over time. And what it leads to is a condescending view of people who don't know Jesus. Yeah. Not in a, but in a moral sense, I want to say, like in a way that we would go, don't you know that if you would just fix yourself, that everything in the world would be okay? And we end up putting a moral, legal code on people that the gospel doesn't put on people. And it's because I think we've become so just so used to the fact that I know Jesus, I belong to Jesus. I'm part of God's kingdom. I'm living in God's kingdom, that over time that can become just so normal for us that when we look at people who aren't living in God's kingdom, they're living under the rule of the dark forces of this world. And we could look at them and go, what's wrong with you? And that is not a gospel mindset. It's not being a gospel centered, kind of person. And so,
And part of following Jesus is you are going to veer into some of those ditches and letting him pull you out of those ditches and tell you you're being an idiot and get like, you know, we'll see it when we go through, when we work our way all through Matthew's gospel. These guys are given a new identity and a new purpose, but they get confused about it and they start to argue about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven and who's going to get to sit on the right hand and who's going to get to sit on the left hand. And, you know, they get confused about what their purpose is. New identity? Oh, I'm an heir. I'm with Jesus. Well, then I must be great. And that means I'm going to get put someplace great. And they've got to get yanked out of that ditch by Jesus. I mean, we're like them. We're human like them.
Yes.
And we got a lot to learn.
So the way that we learn is by practice. So I would say that's just humanness. And so one of the things that we are encouraging people to do this week is to engage in the spiritual practice of fasting or consider it. And so on Wednesday, you're going to see a heads up. Consider on Thursday, like we're not just springing it on you on Thursday, but consider tomorrow, consider, make the preparation. What would it look like for you to fast on Thursday? And maybe it's not a 24-hour fast. If you're not used to fasting, maybe what you could do is say, hey, over the next few weeks, I'm going to experiment with this a little bit. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to experiment. And you would say, what I'm going to do is I'm going to fast during the day. And so I'm going to fast from Wednesday evening, Thursday until dinner. And that would just be a good way to experiment with fasting. And so we're actually, and you know, Jesus is going to speak to fasting. And later on in this summer, we'll talk about fasting. Mm-hmm. But as we step into this week, let's talk a little bit about this spiritual practice. And in particular, we pick Thursday because it's becoming aware of the Spirit's work in us. Mm-hmm. What is God up to? What's Jesus doing through the Holy Spirit at work in me? And one of the spiritual disciplines that we can use to do that is fasting during a day, setting aside time to consider, Holy Spirit, what are you up to And I'm recognizing that I'm wholly dependent upon you above all.
Yeah.
And so let's talk a little bit about this practice. What's kind of been your experience?
Well, one of the things that I think originally thought of fasting as showing something to God. Like, I'm going to show you I'm serious. So if there's a big decision to make, something really big I need help with, prayer about, or someone else does, I don't just mean selfishly, then show God you're serious by fasting. That's kind of the way I think I thought of it. And I didn't really understand this. What you were just talking about kind of gets at the space that fasting creates in two ways. It practically creates space, because if you are not eating a meal, you just got bonus time. So you have some more time to engage with God, engage with his word. But it also creates, I think, this has been my experience, a ton of, I would still call it creating space, but it's mental space with God. Because for me, it makes me think, I mean, I don't forget for very long that I'm fasting when I'm fasting. I know not everybody's this way, but at least I'm doing a 24-hour fast or roughly. I think a lot about, I want to eat. Oh, wait, I'm not eating. Oh, I'm fasting. Why am I fasting? That happens a ton. Oh, I'm going to grab, because I think maybe because I'm a snacker, and so I eat all throughout the day normally, as you know. I'm going to grab a snack. Oh, wait, no, I'm not grabbing a snack because I'm fasting. Why am I fasting? And then bam, you're into, what's God doing in me? What's God doing? What has he done? So for me, one thing it does is it creates the logistics, like the actual physical time of, I don't have to, I'm not sitting down to eat a meal, so I have more time. But it's that reminder of, you are doing something with God. He's engaged in this, so talk to him about it.
Yeah.
That's been a big thing for me.
And for me, it's one of those spiritual disciplines that once upon a time, I wouldn't even have considered that it's something I should do, or maybe even worse, pushed back, because people, in my view, kind of had a formulaic approach.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like you just talked about, Tim. Okay, this is, if I really am serious, if we get really serious, now we're going to pull out the fasting. And so it was this idea of, okay, wait, God's not formulaic, and so I'm not going to try to manipulate God by entering into a fast. And so we may have times where we ask people to fast. And well, first off, I want to say the fast that we're talking about in particular is not eating. There are other things to abstain from, and I would put them in a separate category of spiritual practices that are things that we abstain from. Like, there's just things that you can that you can withhold,
give up,
from yourself.
Go without.
Yeah, that's just a good practice. There's lots of things that we can give up and go without. But fasting in particular in the Bible is talking about food.
Yeah.
And there's something special that happens within the human body even that fasting helps us with. And so I would have said once upon a time, like, okay, well, what's this all about? You know, well, you know, God's the bread of life. It's the only bread I need, that let my hunger, you know, remind me of that. And yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's only one aspect, I think, of a spiritual discipline that's multifaceted. And it can be something where it does demonstrate to God that we're serious. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Right? Like, there's a sacrifice involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a good thing. It's also a way for me to go, God, I'm totally dependent upon you. And I'm going to declare that I'm dependent upon you. And so that's a good thing. But it's also something that in and of itself, and this would be a later discovery for me, it's just good for human people to do. It's not a bad health practice.
Uh-huh.
So when you look at what other faith traditions may practice, or spiritual practices that aren't connected to following Jesus, mm-hmm. right? There's fasting is like one of them. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't just a time to go, okay, this is what we do because we're followers of Jesus. It's something that other religions do. And I'm like, well, what's that about? And so there can be some real added benefit. And in particular, it's the mental clarity that one can get from fasting that all of a sudden began to click for me. That if I'm seeking guidance from the Lord and I'm going, Jesus, I really need your guidance. And so I'm going to fast. It's not just declaring my dependence upon him. It can clear the brain fog or the mental clutter that I have going on so that I can think with greater clarity. And all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, it's just not a one-facet kind of spiritual discipline. It's a multifaceted and practical spiritual discipline that can help me to get greater clarity on what God may be communicating to me.
Yeah.
And that was a whole different way for me to view it.
That's cool.
And I hope it's not heresy.
I don't think it is. But it's, you know, you said multifaceted. That's one purpose. Here's another one. Here's another way it can work. And that's why you already said a couple minutes ago, we experiment with disciplines like this.
Right.
And that's, I don't think we should just go in going, oh, because a discipline is a practice. And so it by nature is gonna, it's like, you know, going to soccer practice. You are gonna work on one thing, but you're gonna develop a bunch of things at once. It's not just gonna do one thing. You're not gonna just strengthen one muscle at a time. You're gonna strengthen a whole group of muscles. And using a spiritual practice like this, you're gonna find that you might aim for one thing, but also God's gonna use it in some different ways. That's that multifaceted thing that you're talking about. And I think it's really helpful to go in with that attitude of, I'm gonna do this thing, and then God, with intention, and see what you do with it. And maybe he's gonna teach you that he's satisfying and he's going to meet your needs and you can depend on him and you don't have to look for satisfaction someplace else. You can find it in him. He might teach you that. He might teach you, he might give you an opportunity to be really focused and show him that you're serious about what you're praying for. And he might give you mental clarity that can help you, you know, clear away the brain fog. All those things, it's what's good about experimenting with something.
Yeah. And Tim, you've connected us to a resource this week.
Yeah.
And so it's not like there's lots of resources out there. But this is just one resource to be able to, if you want more information about fasting, well, you can click on the resource and find out more information about that. And I wasn't intending to do this, but just some practical tips. Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to, hey, I want to get started. Uh-huh. I maybe want to experiment.
Yeah.
Like first, you should experiment with this spiritual discipline, but okay, I want to start. Any tips?
I can give one very practical one that comes to mind immediately. This is just purely practical. It's on that, in that resource. It is one of the things they mention in there in one of their bullets. But the first times I ever fasted or when I was part of a missions team in college, and I had never fasted before. And we would do it the week before we left. And it was a trip that I did 3 years in a row. And I decided by the end of college, oh, I'm not somebody who can do a 24-hour fast because it makes me really, really sick when I go back to eating. And that's because we would break the fast with tons of pizza. Yeah. And so I would fast for 24 hours and then I would be like, I'm so hungry. This pizza's so good. And I'd eat as much of it as I could. And I'd throw up and I'd get sick to my stomach. And I'd for 6 hours or something, I'd be sick. And I was like, oh, I just can't do this. I kept doing it because I was like, well, it's a sacrifice to God or something. I'll get sick for him or something. I just didn't know. Don't break the fast with a ton of greasy food.
Yeah. Good tip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I needed to change, and it worked. So one thing I would say. Don't break your fast with a huge, greasy meal.
That's a good tip. I think for me, it's, I already gave probably one of my biggest tips, which is work your way into it. Don't just go, I'm going 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Work your way into it over time. The other thing, I gave the impression that I never kind of experimented maybe with the idea of fasting, but I would get all this information out there like, okay, well, you know, you don't... Okay, there's just a lot of misinformation out there about going without food. Like, how long can the human body go without food? How, you know, what's healthy, what's unhealthy, all that kind of stuff. So there's just a lot of stuff that we all come in with. But it was really important for me to discover that when people say, when you fast, say, hey, stick to coffee, tea, water, that is really helpful. For me, okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not for you, but I will say this. For me, if I put any kind of fruit juice or anything with any kind of calorie or sugar in it, you're just making life harder. And when
Make it more painful for you.
Just makes it more painful. Yeah. Yep. You're going to get hunger. If you want to feel hunger pangs, drink some fruit juice and don't eat food. Like, do that. And you're going to feel it. Or put some sugar in your body, you know, and you're going to feel it. You just will. And so I'm like, I don't want that. So I would say I discovered it accidentally. So if somebody were going to start, this is what I would say. Over the course of 3 days prior, cut the amount of carbs, increase the amount of protein that you're going to eat before you attempt to go without lunch, breakfast and lunch on Thursday. Make sure in the days leading up to it, you're eating more protein, less carbs, and you'll discover, okay, wait, I can work my way into it. And then if you were going to say, I could do this, you know, I think that if you were just going to go, I'm going to experiment with this once a month, I think it's just going to stay hard. But if you're going to go, I'm going to experiment with this once a week for the next 6 weeks, and in the day or two leading up to it, I'm going to make sure that I'm not putting as many, you know, pizzas in my mouth as I can, either before I start or after I finish, increasing your protein, I do believe that you're going to go, wow, this is doable. And not only is it doable, but I'm actually experiencing not only the discipline of it, but I'm experiencing a greater mental clarity when I'm doing it. I'm experiencing a connection
I'm
with
not
Jesus.
Just thinking about, oh, my stomach, I'm so hungry.
Yeah, right.
So it's not even like, oh, suffering is good or suffering is bad, but you will, I think in my experience, you'll experience the fast differently if you're not so stuck on literal stomach pains because I'm so hungry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah. So with that, that's the encouragement. And then if you are experimenting with it, to let us know, would you reach out to Tim and I? Send us an email. Let us know. Hey, we're listening to the podcast and we're experimenting with this spiritual practice. And what we're going to do is over the coming weeks, we're going to talk more spiritual practices, experimenting. What might that look like each week? Maybe having a different kind of practice to take a look at. So with that, Tim, we're probably well past our time this week, but what do you have for us? Do you have a parting word for us this week?
The parting word is a literal word from Mark Hoffman from his message this weekend, which is delight. And it just has stuck in my head. We should be delighting in the work that God is doing and has done in us. So as you fast, or as you study scripture, or as you just read it devotionally, as you engage with him this week, delight in what he's done, what he's doing, and he will do.
That's awesome. Hey, have a great week.